So we're ready. Okay, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to our session CDP B336, In-Depth Introduction to Service Management Automation. My name is John McCabe. I'm a Senior Premier Field from Microsoft Services, and my colleague to the left.
My name is Anders Bengtsson. I'm a Principal PFE, also from Microsoft.
Principal PFE.
Principal.
Principal PFE. It's very important to get that in there from day one. Anyway, so today we're here to talk to you about it, service management automation, and hopefully give you an in-depth introduction to what it is, how we're going to use it, and when to use it. I realize a lot of people in the room mightn't have heard it, or what the name is. They might understand a little bit about automation. You would have heard about Orchestrator, but we'll get to that in a second. So here's our agenda. So we're going to, first of all, talk about what is SMA, and give you more in-depth around what SMA is and the architecture and things like this, so you have a better understanding going away. Then we're going to talk about how to use SMA, because there's elements in SMA which will become apparent in a few minutes, where you'll kind of go, oh, okay. So we'll get to that. And then finally, we're going to talk to when to use SMA, because when we were first starting out in SMA way over a year ago, our biggest problem was is when can we use it. So we're going to give you a few more details on how to get around that. So first of all, for those of you who don't know, SMA is Service Management Automation. So when you see it in the slides, this is what we're talking about. And we would appreciate, there's going to be a lot of content. We've a very packed 74 minutes or 75 minutes. So if you can keep questions to the end, we have plenty of time at the end. And also it's lunchtime, so hopefully you won't be rushing off and too hungry, and you'll be able to come and ask us some questions.
And also we have what's called staff duty.
Staff duty,
yes, that's correct. So we have staff duty the entire afternoon. So we will be in the expo hall around the blue area.
Yeah.
So just drop by and ask any questions you have.
Yeah, if we can sort out. The final thing we want to say here is it is a level 300 session. We're going to get a little bit geeky and a little bit techie. So if you're not following it, do please come at the end and we'll explain it all the way through, and we'll sit down and map it out for you if you haven't followed something. Okay, so for a show of hands, and I realize it's very bright in my eyes, but for a show of hands, who has heard of or is using SMA today? Okay, so not a huge amount, but okay. What about Orchestrator?
Oh.
Much better.
What about the BizDoc 2007?
No. I can't go to Exchange and, okay. And PowerShell, how many people in the room have skills in PowerShell? Fantastic.
Very good.
Okay. So, let's get into it. What is SMA? And I hope you're all in twos like I am. I really love SMA. It's fantastic. I'm excited. So, SMA is an automation engine based on PowerShell workflows. And I really want to stress that last part of PowerShell workflows, because it's not traditional PowerShell. So, we'll get that into that in a second and explain it a bit more. But it's you do need PowerShell skills, but it's PowerShell workflows. So really, but ultimately, it is just an automation engine. So if you guys have used the likes of Orchestrator, or you guys have used any type of automation engine, it's a similar concept. And we'll show you some examples, and we'll show you all the runbooks that we're going to talk about later on. So don't worry too much. One of the things we were asked is, hang on a second. We've got this lovely Orchestrator product, and now you're bringing us SMA. It's another product. Why do we want to use Orchestrator or SMA? And I'd say during the session we're going to explain it a bit more, but the principle that you need to come away from this just particular slide is that SMA is its own infrastructure. It stands on its own. It does not need Orchestrator in order to operate. Okay? So if you guys leave this room right now and want to spin up SMA, you can run SMA completely independently of Orchestrator. But we'll explain some stuff later on where you'll actually find a nice hybrid and mix of it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
So the other thing you need to do understand is that SMA by default has no GUI. So for the guys who like to crack their knuckles and ready to go, you guys are going to be coding from day one. So you're going to be using your PowerShell ISE, you're going to use your Notepad, and you're going to be importing your runbooks. Unless you guys use Azure Pack, or we have it on the slide as Windows Azure Pack, but as of the keynote the other day, it was renamed to Azure Pack. So in Windows Azure Pack, you guys get a GUI type of experience, which gives you a lot more visual information. And this is a demo we're going to do in a few minutes, so it'll reinforce the information for you. And the final thing we want to say is that where can you find SMA? So, how many people have gone to the MSDM website or your download website and looked for SMA? And you kind of go, there's no product called SMA on the website. Well, SMA, if you haven't guessed already, was written by the orchestrator team. So it's in package with the orchestrator 2012 OR2 Media. So download your ISO, pop up the splash screen, and on the bottom of it, you'll see service management automation.
So John, so we have one installation media with two engines,
yep.
Two automation engines. So what's up with that? Should we just take that now and so we have solved that?
It's a good question. So Orchestrator is going slowly into the night. The name isn't.
Fading away.
Fading away like a slow ship to Valhalla or something. So, but the name, so you will still see the Orchestrator name, and over the next year you will see lots of tools come out to help you with this migration. But we'll say it later on and we'll keep repeating it throughout the session. If you have an Orchestrator investment today, do not worry. You have at least 10 years of support on it, and it's not going away. They're going to give you a really nice migration power. They're working very hard to get this done.
Yes, and if you're about to start with the data center automation, it's like 10 minutes to start with Orchestrator, the drag and drop UI, so it might just be easier to start there. And as John is saying, it's not a waste of time. We will migrate that later on.
Yeah, cool. Okay, so we said at the start, it's based on PowerShell workflows, and I really just want to give you a quick 2 minutes on PowerShell workflows. First of all, it was introduced in PowerShell version 3.0, and obviously 4, and it's in version 5, and whatever version next, if we follow our numbers. It looks like PowerShell. It feels like PowerShell. You can go up and mess with it like PowerShell, but you can be guaranteed not all the functionality of native PowerShell will be available in PowerShell workflows. Why? Because PowerShell workflows is based on an inbuilt component in Windows nowadays that developers used to are more primarily familiar with, called Windows Workflow. So it runs code slightly different. It represents objects that were in PowerShell slightly different. So you need to adjust when you go on of what's going to be in your traditional PowerShell code and you translate it into Windows Workflow. Now, going to Windows Workflow gives us a few benefits, especially with inside the automation space, which are absolutely critical to make sure that like our jobs run correctly, that we can recover from faults. Like, and again, if I asked it to the orchestrator people in the audience, when you have to do a checkpoint in a runbook to be able to recover to that point in a runbook, how difficult was that? It was really, really difficult to do. There was a lot of steps, a lot of IPs, and then suddenly you have this big collage of a runbook and you don't know what you're doing alongside it. So it was difficult to implement. And with PowerShell Workflow, we've introduced checkpoint and suspend, which is really awesome. I mean, I love this thing of where you can have like multiple tasks in a runbook. The runbook might, you might need to reboot your server in the middle of the runbook. You can reboot the server and retake off from the last checkpoint. And you can have as many checkpoints as you want in the runbook.
It's fantastic. It is five stars.
Five stars.
Five stars.
Five stars. Yeah. So the other thing it introduces is parallel execution. So again, trying to run something like this in Orchestrator where you're going to the point of, I want to deploy 50 VMs, which is actually, when you're talking on cloud scale, is a thing that you might actually have to do one day. If you're trying to run 50 VMs in Orchestrator, sure you got job concurrency, but it's slow, it's difficult to implement. You have to make sure it's sequenced and called properly. In PowerShell workflow, it's native. You can run an activity and a hell of a lot faster. I think we calculated to something like a factor of 10 faster of what you can, if you have similar runbooks in Orchestrator and SMA, it will run 10 times faster at least. And that's just today. So that's kind of cool. Yeah?
Fantastic.
All good.
Yeah.
So we mentioned Windows Azure Pack, and the reason why we bring Windows Azure Pack here is because, as said, it's a GUI type of experience. And for those in the audience who don't know what Azure Pack is an attempt to bring Azure technologies on-premise. So it's not going to be the full Azure suite. It never will be. They run at a certain time frame behind Azure, and they take the most popular technologies from what people are using in Azure and bring them on-premise to give you a self-service portal with a multi-tenant experience. And it has its own admin portal, and it has its own tenant portal. But going forward, for those guys who really like the GUI, you will use Windows Azure Pack, even the Express install, to edit and look at the information that's coming from SMA. It's far easier to get that information from Windows Azure Pack.
So Windows Azure Pack is about building Azure technology inside your own data center, in short.
Yeah.
But do we need to build private clouds to use SMA?
So, and this is really important, no you don't. SMA will run on any infrastructure. So you have a PowerShell module, that's it. That's all you need to run SMA and get it interfacing. So you can have Active Directory, Exchange, all the other applications, third-party vendors. If they supply a PowerShell module, you can automate one inside SMA. Windows Azure Pack just gives you a nice interface, yeah. But you don't need to go ahead and implement like the Service Provider Foundation framework. You don't need to implement Hyper-V, and you don't need to implement SCVMM and all the other components that make up a private cloud.
So we can actually install Windows Azure Pack on the SMA server or on one server and just use it for SMA. So no need to build infrastructure as a service or PaaS or anything like that.
Exactly. So just what we talked about here, the reason why it's so good is that the Windows Azure Pack guys actually wrote a native connector to connect to the web service of SMA. And we'll explain the web service in a couple of minutes in an architecture slide. But it's in there, it's in the product. There's no extra install. You spin up Windows Azure Pack and it's there ready to connect to your service management automation, which is just fantastic. As we said, Windows Azure Pack is not necessarily, you don't need it for SMA to function. It will work a lot, and you like working on the command line, you can go ahead and do it. It's fantastic. And one thing that we will say is, when you do use Windows Azure Pack to do it, you will notice a lot of internal jobs which you can potentially link to Runbook automation. At this current release, and it's not to say that it's not coming, but at this current release, the tenants cannot call any SMA runbooks that you will link into the Windows Azure Pack. So just at this minute, so when you get into it, you're not disappointed from day one, because it can hit people quite hard.
Yeah, but we will show the Grid Pro stuff and how we can do that. So
yeah,
show it in the later demo.
Now, over to Anders for a demo.
Finally. Everyone has been waiting for this. So here we have it, SMA. Should we just take a half minute by looking at it? It's so beautiful. Oh, yeah. So what you see here is the Windows Azure Pack, as Jon explained for us, that we can use to build Azure on-prem. And if we have SMA, we can connect SMA into Windows Azure Pack on the Automation tab. And if I click the Automation tab, like I have done here, I get a dashboard of my SMA environment. I can see jobs running, suspended, stopped jobs, and so on. If I scroll down a little bit here on this first dashboard, I can see that right now I have 3 jobs that are suspended. Very nice. Meaning that we have stored the entire state of those jobs into the database, and we can resume them later. For example, if we need to do patch management on our SMA environment, we can just suspend the jobs. Or if something happens in the network, instead of the crashing, we can just suspend them instead. Yep. It's really nice. On the right side, we can see number of runbooks, modules, activities that we have in the environment right now. If we scroll up a little bit, and we go into runbooks. We get a list of all our runbooks that we have in the environment. And if I open up one of these runbooks, like this one, you can see here first, we can look at this. Here in the bottom, no. Like that. You see what we can start a runbook from here. We can import a runbook, export runbook, and delete runbook. And something to remember is that everything you see in here, we can do with PowerShell. So you can easily import, export your runbooks with PowerShell. So let's go into one of the runbooks. This one. So when we click on a runbook, we get a new dashboard where we can see information about just this runbook. We can click on jobs, and we can see information about this runbook, jobs that has been running, and we can go into them a little bit deeper, see more information about them. And now what everyone has been waiting for, the code. So in here on the authoring tab, we can write our code. So in the current version, we are writing PowerShell workflow code in there.
If you watch Eamon O'Reilly's session on futures, you will see that there will be, within the next year, a drag-and-drop UI where it will pretty much emulate the orchestrator experience that you have now with the activities, and it will have all code built in. So makes it much easier that if you are fearful of PowerShell and PowerShell workflows, which is it's a common problem, especially in when we go to customer environments, trying to get them to jump that is something we see. But it's coming. It is coming.
So when you have managed to learn PowerShell workflow, we will release the UI.
Cool. Yeah.
So what you can see here is that we have one published version and one draft version, meaning that you can have one version running in production that you can use, and you can also have one draft version that you're working on. So if we open this one up, you see we have a bit of different buttons, and down here now we can, of course, we can test our runbook and we can publish it back, save and undo changes. We can insert different global settings, and we'll come back to that in a later demo. So this is where we write our code. Might be a little bit too much to say. I often use another tool to write the code and test it, and then I just paste it in here when it's working. Because in here, for example, if you want to, let's say you want to copy this, you right click, because you normally right click to get copy, there is no copy there. So it's sometimes easier to use like another tool, like the PowerShell.
PowerShell ISE or the Visual Studio extensions?
Yes, and then when it's all working, you paste it in here. But it's absolutely possible to write the code in here. On the Schedule tab, you can add existing, or you can create a new schedule, so you can make your runbook to run every morning or every evening or whatever you want. And then on the Configure tab, you can input a description, of course, and you can also add tags. As you can see, we don't have really a folder structure here, as we have in Orchestrator, where you can build your different small yellow folders. Instead, we have tags, so it's important that you add different tags here to make sure you have some kind of order of your runbooks. And you can also configure different log settings here. We will get back to logs a little bit later also. But it's important to know that if you configure your code, you tell it to write to log, there will be no logs if you don't enable it here. So it's a good idea to enable it here too. So I think that was a good start.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. Everyone okay on that so far? Fantastic.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's get into a bit of the SMA architecture. And for you guys who are used to Orchestrator, you're going to see some very familiar concepts here. They didn't reinvent the wheel and cook up something brand new to confuse us all. They've actually stayed quite nicely and simplified it a bit more for us. So it's really exciting. So we still have our SMA database, which is still based on SQL Server, and it will still hold all the configuration and the job information and deployment information when inside that environment. And as Anders said, when you're running checkpoints in a workflow, it also stores the state information for the workflow jobs or for your SMA runbooks. We have a concept called the SMA web service, and if you haven't figured out now with cloud, everyone's going to web services. So service-oriented architecture or REST-based APIs, you can do all the calls and all the interactions with the true web servers. And you'll see in a few minutes with the slide, even the PowerShell module that comes with SMA uses the web servers to make the calls. It's not an internal SDK or something secret in the back with some C# or C++ code. It's making a call against the REST API. So we'll show you that in a second. We have a concept called the SMA worker, which is very similar to the runbook worker. And like what we said before, like in traditional Orchestrator, you want to have at least two of them. Or if you read our TechNet documentation from yesterday, it said you want three of them. And really, specifically, it said you want them as virtual machines as well, which is really cool because it just shows that migration and allows you to reprovision out a virtual machine far quicker and get it up and running and scale it and downscale it and those bits.
So what about the worker here? If we have multiple workers, how does that work? Is it like a waterfall model that we have in Orchestrator?
Well, kind of. So one of the things that you got to understand, and it will seem as a limitation at first in terms of how it allocates jobs and picks up work. So the SMA database, as we said, has a jobs table. And what it does is it looks how many SMA worker environments it has in its environment. So let's say these two SMA workers represented slots, 0 to 1,000. So what it will say is I have two of them, and it will split the slots up equally between the two runbook workers, or the SMA worker roles. From there, what it will do is randomly generate a number when a job comes into the queue, and then allocate that to whatever number job it gets, we'll allocate it to the SMA worker.
It's crystal clear. Very easy. So, but there might be a little bit of a challenge there, because if the worker goes offline after it has a job has been assigned to it, no other worker will pick up that job.
That's correct.
Because it's assigned to, for example, worker number two here. What you need to do then is to shut down all the workers, run a PowerShell command, start the we only have one worker then in this scenario, so we start that worker again, and suddenly it owns all the slots, so it will run all the jobs.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Clear as...
Super clear.
Super clear.
Very
super
clear. Clear. It's on my blog with pictures.
With pictures.
With pictures.
So guys, as we said earlier on, in order to manage the SMA, as an SMA database and the runbook workers and to submit jobs and to submit anything you want or work with the SMA service, you do it via the web service. The web service requires PowerShell. There's native PowerShell modules available. And they will. There's a specific, when you run each command with inside SMA, there's a specific parameter that you need to run on each command, which is dash web service endpoint. And you need to specify the web service endpoint of the SMA web service each time you run a command. So it will always interact with the SMA web service. The other thing is that Windows Azure Pack, as we said earlier on, that will interact with the web service. So from day one, when you go out, everything reacts with the Windows web service. And a lot of our components, and even when you're working with public Azure, it's the same principle, which we'll talk about in a little bit. But for those of you guys who are orchestrator dependent and you guys are not getting rid of it and going to do a fast migration, which we highly not recommend to just drop it tomorrow and suddenly spin up an SMA environment. They can live quite happily. And you will see from the slide, you'll see that the SMA and the Orchestrator web service can talk to each other, which means you can call runbooks with inside Orchestrator from SMA and vice versa. Because there is, as of today, there is things that are easier to do with inside Orchestrator than it is to what within SMA. But there's things in SMA which will just execute faster, so it might be a time-dependent service, and you'll want to do it in SMA. Okay? Cool. So, quick note on installation and post-deployment. So, SMA is really simple to deploy. It's literally next, 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 next on each of the components. The only thing you need to understand is that when you deploy the web service, the web service will require the PowerShell modules to be installed first. And that's on any web service that you deploy. And like this, you can deploy multiple web services and have them in high availability and load balance them out, but each of them will need the PowerShell tools installed. Second then is deploy multiple runbook workers. Obviously for high availability, you do not want to deploy a test or a production environment with just one runbook worker. You will not get a feel of how it works. You need to deploy multiple. As I said, as of today, when you read the TechNet documentation on this to get your guidance, you will see that it says a minimum of 3 runbook workers, and they are fully supported as VMs, which is, I think, really cool. The third step, and is a bit of an unusual step when you look at it initially, it's enable log purge. Log purge is basically, the reason why they say it is for performance reasons. So much like Orchestrator, if the database became overwhelmed with incoming logs or jobs running and the tables filled up, the database becomes slow. And once your Orchestrator database became slow, your jobs became slow to execute. Everything around your automation environment slowed down and became a horrible experience. It is the same principle for SMA. You could have a high impact if someone trigger a runbook instance 500 times, and that will generate a huge amount of log data. And if you don't have log purge on from day one, you're going to have bad performance within inside a month or two of deploying SMA on a large scale. Okay? So it's really important to enable log purge. The next one is deploy Windows Azure Pack, and this is really an optional step, but for the guys who like GUI type of experiences, it's an essential. As I said, you can install Windows Azure Pack Essentials from day one and be happy. You do not need to do a full distributed Azure Pack install to get this working. It can just be the Essentials version, link it in, and start working away, which is fantastic. And going forward, for those of you who want to know, Windows Azure Pack will be the front end from this for quite a long time. So it's not going to change. And obviously then, the last step, subject to part 4, is configure Windows Azure Pack integration, which is as easy as popping up a dialog box, entering 3 bits of information, and then you're connected. So, a bit more how we will use and what you need to know in order to use SMA. Okay? So the first thing and the first concept is assets. And you'll see some familiar terminology here like connections, variables, credentials, and schedules. But they work slightly different. Some of them are very similar to Orchestrator, but also slightly different because you can do more with them when inside Windows Azure Pack. So connections, in this case, when you registered an IP in Orchestrator, you always have to provide some detailed information in order to be able to use the activity and run commands or get information from, say, a System Center Virtual Machine Manager or a SCOM server or something to that effect. It is the same deal with inside Windows or SMA and Azure Pack. You can register a connection and just call the connection and obtain information directly from inside SMA, so you can figure out, oh, I want to work on this VM object or I want to work on this alert, and so on and so forth as we go down the chain of automation. With variables, variables are a similar concept. So if you know PowerShell, you know the idea of variables, which is really cool. In the really nice thing on Windows Azure Pack that you couldn't do in Orchestrator easily at all is you can update a variable on the fly. So say your workflow failed and you need to change it to attack a different server or do something else, you can change that variable and rerun the workflow, which is an awesome feature because you can't do that in Orchestrator. So it gives you more error handling when inside your workbook. The other thing, PS credentials. So big fault I found in Orchestrator is that when you wanted to run against any system, you either had to give the system the privileges, or you had to give the runbook worker's service account the privileges on the remote system in Orchestrator. Or you tried to use the run as activity, or in most activities in Orchestrator, you could specify a specific security account it could run against that machine. Now, the problem is it would always run by the default service account, always. And then it would fail over to what was in the activity. And more to be the point, that anyone had access to the credentials with inside Orchestrator, if you were a runbook designer, you had access to it all. So you left your system open for exposure. Whereas much like similar concepts within as a run as accounts in SCOM or Virtual Machine Manager, they've brought this into SMA and Windows Azure Pack. So you can specify the accounts, keep them secure, and people can use them to access the systems, but they can't go and find out the password of the account. So you give them the limited privilege that they need. Another feature is obviously the certificate. So an X509 certificate can be presented for authentication to a remote system if it's a really, really secure system and that's what your guys use. Schedules, Anders showed you schedules a second ago in the demo, and it's the same principles with inside Orchestrator. If you only want a runbook to run between 9 and 5, it will only run between 9 and 5. If you only want to specify maintenance windows across your enterprise, you can do the same thing with schedules. Cool. Excellent. With that, another demo.
Fantastic. So we're back in SMA. Looking good. Yeah. So assets. So we are in on the asset page. I didn't click on that the last demo just because we had this extra demo just about it. So in here we can add new assets, as John explained, connections, credentials, variables, and schedules. So let's click on one of these. We can pick the type. Say John.
Me?
John. That. Take it. That. We can say a value of. We can pick if we want it encrypted or not, but let's say we don't need to encrypt this one. Like that. So we create the new variable. And what we can also see here is all the assets we have in this environment, and we can go into one of these and we can edit them if we want to and look at them. We can also use the import button down here to import a module. And this is really a nice feature because if you're working with Orchestrator today, you know that from time to time you're looking for integration packs to get these small, good-looking, colorful activities, and then suddenly you don't find the integration pack. And then it's like, wow, what I'm supposed to do now? Mm-hmm. And then you start looking in the community, on blogs and so on, and maybe you find it, maybe you don't, and then you have to go to PowerShell, or you just skip that automation scenario and start on the next one. But with SMA, we only need the PowerShell module. So as soon as you have a module, you can import it here, and you can start doing automation. And that's really nice because there are like when we release software, often we have a partial module, that meaning that you can start automation from day number one. When other vendors release hardware, software, they also have partial modules, meaning that you can take those modules and put them in here, and you can start automation or automate stuff. Normally, that vendor might not build an integration pack to Orchestrator, but here, you can use it from day number one.
Excellent.
Very, very nice. Very cool. So let's zoom out again. Add settings, we looked at this one, and delete is, of course, delete. So I added a variable here named John, and as we said earlier, everything you do in here, you can do with PowerShell. You can actually do more with PowerShell.
Yeah.
So if we go to PowerShell, here we have it. I have get SMA variable, and I point to the web service endpoint, as John explained before. So it's my WAP01 server, and the name of the variable is John. So let's run this. Fantastic. So we get all the information about that variable. And of course, we can also update it. So if we run this command instead, set SMA variable, and we point out to the web service again, the name, John, and the new value. That's like you when we're having breakfast this morning. Maybe on. Yeah. So let's run this. Like that. And if we go back to the portal and we search for John, here we have John. And we can see that the new value is maybe on. So it's really nice that we can do everything we can do in here, we can do with PowerShell. So if you think about the scenario where you have been building your runbook in a dev or test environment, and now you want to move it to production, now you can have an easily small script that synchronizes that environment with your production environment, exporting the runbooks, exporting all the global settings, making sure that all the global settings is in the other environment, and also importing the runbook, putting it into production. That we absolutely not could do in Orchestrator, but we see that question like every week in the community. So it's really opening up for a lot of nice things that we couldn't do in Orchestrator.
Absolutely. Cool.
Yep.
Okay. Let's switch back. So next thing we want to talk to you about, and really powerful with inside SMA, this feature, is the checkpoint and suspend. I mean, I can't stress it enough, is that when you're writing a complex workflow and it fails in the middle of it and it's 100 activities and you just want to go mad and explode on stage because it's that frustrating that you have to restart. But not only do you have to restart, you have to make sure you validate what hasn't been done or what has been done along the chain. Because, for example, if you generate an AD user account and you have a specific way of formatting the AD account every single time, you can't create two AD accounts with the same name or the same SAM account, it will fail. And imagine this along with 50 steps. It's just going to infuriate you. So checkpoint workflow will allow a workflow to fail and restart from the last known checkpoint or where you've included in your code. And as we said, you can use it as many times as you want in the code. So you do something, you can checkpoint a workflow. You do something else, checkpoint a workflow. And all the way through. It will even persist through reboots, which is really nice.
Yeah, that's really nice because we store it in the database. And you could suspend running on this worker, suspend the job, and continue on this worker.
Yeah.
How cool is that?
Yeah.
And it's also important to note that it's just the latest checkpoint that you can use.
Yeah.
You can have 10 checkpoints in your script or your runbook.
Yeah.
I guess we should say runbook.
Runbook is
better. Yeah. but you can only use the latest one. So even if you checkpoint 10 times, it's just the latest one we will store.
Yeah. Cool. So this leads us into the suspend workflow. So you guys know your enterprise environments better than I do, but from the customers that I get to work with, there's always a manual step when deploying a system somewhere. For whatever reason, it might be needing to get a specific certificate and the guy will not allow to auto-generate a certificate. It might need it to be generating a license file that can only be generated when you have spun up the NIC and the actual name of the machine. Something is there. So with inside the suspend workflow command, we can figure out and say, okay, suspend the workflow, go do the manual task and then resume the workflow to allow the either the application to complete or domain join or whatever the case may be. This is why like it's exceptionally cool feature. I love it. Following on from that, then you've got the suspend SMA job. So let's say a job had failed, or you want to, again, long-running job that you want to call, you don't want to do an inline script, and you don't want to do it inside a runbook. You can do it outside of a runbook and use the commandlet parameter suspend SMA job to suspend your jobs in your environment. Store it. If there was a problem for the runbook worker or if there was a problem in the code and you needed to stop it there, make some changes and allow it to re-pick up the job, this is something you can actually do. One of the common scenarios that we use it for is catching workflow exceptions. So if you do the proper syntax of PowerShell code where you go your try, your catch, and your execute, or error handling will inside PowerShell and PowerShell workflows, well then it's a great way to catch an exception. Catch the exception, suspend the workflow, fix the problem. It could just be a file out of place, it could be the name is wrong. You can do something about it and then allow the job to recover.
And that's really nice if you think about a long-running scenario. Maybe you're building a new user account, building link account, building mailbox, setting up workstation, ordering new flowers, all that stuff in one long-running workflow. It might be a problem if it's like interrupted in the middle because you have to restart it and it will take forever and you have to clean up and so on. So it's really good to have the checkpoint there in the middle. Checkpoint, send an email, say like, I can't create this user account because of this and this, and you do some little tweak there, and then you just resume the runbook again.
Yeah, cool. So that leads us into the next phase, which is inline script. So I am sure everyone's asking, I have PowerShell workflows, but I have all these lovely scripts I've spent years automating, and I want to lift and shift them into runbooks now. I want to use PowerShell workflow. I want to use SMA runbooks. Well, although we're not going to really encourage you to just lift and shift and not do anything from going onwards, you do need to edit and spend some time translating them to PowerShell workflow. But if you are in a rush today, you can execute native PowerShell inside PowerShell workflows using the inline script command and the curly brackets, which will encapsulate the native PowerShell commands you want to use. Some things you need to understand about this is that when it is running, it will exit Windows workflow during the duration of execution for that PowerShell code, start a little PowerShell console in the background, obviously you don't see it, execute the code, and then return the control back to the Windows workflow job. Okay? So we'll actually execute native PowerShell code, so you can still do all the lovely things that you do in PowerShell and then return them to the overall Windows workflow job. But when you're in that inline script, you lose the ability to checkpoint or suspend the workflow. You are in native PowerShell. If the function doesn't exist in PowerShell, it won't exist when it's executing that inline script. So it's a caveat, and it's a really thing you need to understand. Yeah. The last thing you need to understand is that when you are using the inline script, because it's making a call out to PowerShell and not Windows workflow, your variables need to be modified using a scope modifier, as you'll see on the screen, the dollar using colon and then the variable name without the dollar sign that you would be traditionally used when you're calling a variable. You need to do this in order to be able to access the content of the variable inside the inline script. Okay?
Yeah, what we can also add there is that as it is starting a new PowerShell window, it does take a little bit of performance. So if you have like 1,000 PowerShell scripts today, it's not supposed that you just copy, paste them into SMA and think that, oh, now I'm running SMA, very nice, because that's not really optimal. So you only use this when you absolutely need to use it. Yeah. So don't be lazy and just put all your PowerShell scripts in there. It's not supposed to work like that.
No, you do have to spend some time figuring out what PowerShell workflow is and how you need to modify your code in order to execute with inside PowerShell workflow natively and take the benefits of it, because yes, it really works well.
Yeah.
Okay, so next one is nesting runbooks. So it was very common in Orchestrator to, when you had a long running task, to divide it up into chunks. So for example, format the AD user account, create the AD user, create the link account, create the exchange account, and so on and so forth. And each runbook would become a tool. So it could be called independently of the master workflow, which would run the whole job, or you can call it with inside the master workflow. It's similar principles with inside when you're designing PowerShell scripts or PowerShell workflows. You should treat them as tools, so they're reusable. You get the same effect each and every time. Reusable, repeatable, predictable, which is like obviously in automation, it's a key characteristic. So in SMA, when you want to invoke another runbook, you use the invoke inline command with inside the PowerShell workflow, and you just call it by the runbook name and then by the parameters. And as you'll see in a second, Anders will do a demo, but all the outputs will roll up, and it will execute one after another, so it will go runbook 1, runbook 2, runbook 3, runbook 4, one after another. If you don't want that and you want to have multiple of the one of the master runbooks running each and every single time, you can use the external SMA PowerShell commandlet, start SMA runbook. And it will essentially start the job and then return the prompt back to you so you can start a second job, a third job, and fourth job. So it returns control. The job will run in the background, and you need to go and get the GUID of the job, and then you can get the output of the job from there. So you can continue on and work.
Yeah.
Okay? Excellent. The other thing you need to know is about data return. So data return, very familiar if you're using PowerShell. You pipe the output of whatever you're running into a variable name, and then you can access the contents of the variable name and take execution based on what is in that. So if it's true, if it's false, if it's success, if it's not success, you can do something about it. But if you use the start of the runbook with the start SMA runbook job, as we said, you need to get the job ID and then use get SMA job to get the output. Okay?
Great.
So another demo.
Oh, fantastic. Finally.
Fantastic.
And now you will be surprised. Ta-da, Orchestrator. Didn't see that one coming. So back in Orchestrator. So here we have a runbook that creates a user account. And now everyone that hasn't seen Orchestrator, oh, that's a really nice UI.
It's lovely UI.
Oh, it seems easy to get started with. Yeah. So we have a runbook here, create user, create mailbox, set up link, create the user folder. And there are many customers are using exactly more or less a solution like this, a little bit more advanced maybe. So if you want to do checkpointing in here, meaning that if this restarts, we want to start where we stopped. If you want to do that in Orchestrator, it's a little bit complicated because there is nothing like state tracking in Orchestrator from out of the box. So you need to invent it. A common way to invent it is with an external database. So we start and we ask that database, have I already done this step? Yes or no? And then you decide if we should create the user or move on. And then you ask the database again, have I created this mail account already? And then you decide where to go. But as you can see here, the runbook just grows a lot here. You can see we add on a lot of query and update database activities. So it will pretty fast be really, really complicated to keep this up to date and to get this to work. If you would like to do the same stuff in SMA, it would look something like this, and I will zoom here very soon. So we have our parameters, input parameters, first name, last name. Then we maybe create the user account here. We see I'm using inline script here. And as John explained before, I need to put this dollar using before everything to use the input parameters inside of the inline script, because that's like its own little world, the inside script there. So we need to pass the parameters in there. And as you can see, I'm also using dollar $username, meaning that the result from that command will be stored in the dollar $username variable, so I can use it later on. And now here, checkpoint workflow. This is the only line you need to have in there to store the entire state of that job into the database. So if I'm for some reason can't create the mailbox, we go to the next checkpoint, we spend there, and I can look into why couldn't I create the mailbox, and I can resume the job. So it's a little bit easier than in Orchestrator. If you remember the beginning with all the query database, update database activities, I replace all that with this line. And then I move on I create the mailbox, and then I have a new one, Checkpoint workflow. Not very complicated.
No, very easy to implement.
One thing to remember is that it takes a little bit of performance when you store the checkpoint in the database. So maybe you shouldn't do it every second. Do it for every task that you don't want to restart. That's a good rule. Yeah. So that's the first one. And we looked at inline script, and we should look at nested runbooks too. Let me see, runbooks. Oh, this. So this runbook is a strange runbook. It's just starting another runbook. So this runbook is starting the same runbook in two different ways. So the first one, we use inline invoke of the runbook, meaning that we will start the runbook and we will wait until it's completed, and the result will get back to the $VM variable. So we can use it in the rest of the script here, in the rest of the runbook. And when we do that, we pass on input parameters like the instance size and the VM name. I guess this runbook is building a new VM somewhere. So the first version here, the first alternative, will start the runbook and wait until it's completed. Same way you do in Orchestrator when you check that wait for completion checkbox. The second alternative here, you can see that it's also calling the web service and the name of the runbook, and then it pass on the parameters here. Pass on the parameters. And this one is like a, it's like an anti-tank gun. You fire it and you forget about it. So this one will just start a new job, and run that runbook. And if you want anything back from it, you need to take care of the job ID that you get, and then you need to query SMA, hey, do you have any result from job ID, and then input the job ID. So it's two really total different ways. The first way, we'll wait. The second alternative, we'll just start and forget about it.
Cool.
Two different ways, and it's good in different scenarios.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that's it.
All good. So guys, the next question, so we've given you, the things we've shown you in SMA so far are obviously the key things you need to get started. So when you leave today, that's what you need to know to get started. These are going to be the blockers, these are going to be the information you need to code. You need to do some research and update your skills in certain areas in order to move forward. Okay? So one of the things that we came across when we first started using SMA was when to use it. We had Orchestrator, we didn't quite understand. It was like, hang on a second, this just does not make sense. Now in today's modern world and today's modern data center environment, it makes a bit more sense, and we'll talk right now about it. So one of the first things that you will come across is that Orchestrator integration packs are difficult to come by and sometimes expensive if you go to third party. And if you want to code your own, you will have to be either very good at C# or very good at figuring out how to format PowerShell commandlets inside the Orchestrator integration toolkit. It wasn't the easiest thing in the world to do. You could do, obviously, run native scripts and do PowerShell inside, but then you start getting into execution context of 64-bit and 32-bit. So it wasn't easy. Now, in SMA, every vendor, or almost every vendor, are releasing PowerShell modules with their tools. So it's kind of easy and very easy to expose out into your SMA environment. If you need a large number of runbook instances, SMA scales better. SMA was designed from the ground up with cloud in mind. Orchestrator, unfortunately, wasn't. It was a legacy component that we bought and upgraded from Opalis and brought it into Orchestrator 2012. It had some scale limitations. In SMA, we've solved a lot of those problems, and we can scale an awful lot better. And if you think, we'll talk about it in a second, Azure Automation is SMA. Okay? If you're already using Windows Azure Pack, it makes sense to bring SMA. You can link a lot of jobs inside Windows Azure Pack based on events, and you can call runbooks based on events from the admin side of the portal. So it's really cool. Or if you're just looking for an excuse to use Windows Azure Pack, it's a good way of doing it. So it's fantastic. If you have SCO or System Center Orchestrator in the environment right now, and it doesn't offer any advantages in terms of performance, ease of use, Do it in SMA. You are going to have to go that way at some point. It's easier to start investing your time in SMA today. You want to do parallel execution, and it was explained in parallel execution is really simple to do in SMA. It's difficult to do in Orchestrator, and it scales better in SMA, so it's really a good use scenario for this. When you're using checkpointing, and we've talked about checkpoint a few times at this stage, checkpoint, 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 far easier to do in SMA. It is absolutely essential you do it there. If you have PowerShell skills and no Orchestrator skills, invest your time in SMA, not Orchestrator, okay? If you're making that decision today, that's what we recommend you to do. And then finally, if you don't know PowerShell, which I hope it's a core skill set, and you don't know Orchestrator, then start with SMA, figure out PowerShell, figure out workflow. I won't say a wasted investment, but from your personal time, PowerShell workflow is going to be the future. And anything that you invest in PowerShell workflows will be translatable to the cloud. So if you invest time figuring out how SMA works, your skills will translate to Azure Automation easily. So with SMA and Orchestrator, they can't coexist together. It's not a doom and gloom story, and we really want to stress that. SMA Orchestrator, in its current iteration, will be around for quite a while. It's got at least 10 years of support if they don't update the product. If they bind it tomorrow, you've got 10 years of support. So you've got a long time to make sure you sweat the investment you have in your Orchestrator estate. But they can operate together. But they can also operate independently. You can do lots of workflow inside SMA and lots of workflow in Orchestrator and not have to worry.
Yeah. So
there's a lot of overlap in capabilities, which is kind of cool. And the last line is kind of wrong based on what happened earlier on in Eamon's session. So there will be tools to assist you with migrating a runbook from Orchestrator into SMA.
Yeah.
So that's really cool.
So let's look at this.
So, demos.
So, as Jon said, they can coexist. And here, I have a SharePoint site where I put names, I create new list items when I would like to have a new virtual machine. It's really nice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I fill in the name, fill in the expiry date of my new VM, fill in the location and the size. So I have size here, location here. And then I store it in this SharePoint site. And what will happen in the background is that we have our Orchestrator runbook that's monitoring that SharePoint site. Because it's quite easy, it's just one activity in Orchestrator to monitor a SharePoint site. Super easy to build. You get started in 10 minutes, so yeah, it's really easy.
Yep.
Moving on in this runbook, after a while, we look at the location and what kind of purpose for that virtual machine. And if it's, for example, production, we will go up and invoke a virtual machine manager to build it in our private cloud. If it's test or dev, for example, in this case, we will invoke SMA. And we will invoke SMA with a small PowerShell script I will show you. A little bit bigger here so you can see. So the first thing here is that I do a remote session to my web server where I also have SMA. Of course, I could install the SMA module on my runbook server, but I haven't done that, so that's why I do the remote session. So remote session here, and then I do the start SMA runbook, point out the web service again, point out the runbook name, and then over here, I pass on the parameters like VM name, I would like to have that, service request ID to keep track of it, instance size. So these three or four lines is what you need to invoke a SMA runbook from Orchestrator. So as Jon said, they can really coexist. So if we go over to the SMA side, have it over here. So I have the runbook here, building all the machines that I need. And as Jon said, let's say we order 10 machines, then it's much faster in SMA because we can do it in parallel there. Can't do that in Orchestrator the same way. So once this runbook is completed and it has built all the machines, so it's quite easy to build machines in SMA, building them in Azure, because there are so many scripts in the community, so it takes like 10 minutes to find one and then just steal it with pride. Yeah. So if we go over, as you can see here on the last line, we are invoking another runbook And this runbook is looking up orchestrator runbook. So here's the path to my orchestrator runbook. Here it is. And I pass on some parameters back to orchestrator. So when this runbook is running, it actually starts an orchestrator runbook. So back to orchestrator, it will start this runbook. And the only thing this runbook is doing is that it takes the remote desktop shortcut file from Azure, download that file, and put it on SharePoint site and update the request to complete it. And here's the shortcut to your new machine. So we are moving from SharePoint to Orchestrator to SMA to Orchestrator and back to SharePoint. So you can really mix them any way you want there. And I think it's just easier to update SharePoint from Orchestrator, so I use Orchestrator. But if I'm building a lot of machines in Azure, that's faster and easier with SMA, so I do that with SMA. And for my end user, they have no clue anyway, because they're just using SharePoint. So it doesn't matter.
No, it's cool.
Okay. So one of the other things that that comes up often is, what about Service Manager integration? So Orchestrator had a really good story with integrating into the connectors that Service Manager natively provided. And you can create service requests then that you can open up to your organization and say, well, like Anders just said, I want a new VM. So that will generate a service request. You can have forms to fill in. They fill it all in, and then it will trigger automation workflow when inside Orchestrator. So the question is where is it in service management automation? Well, the answer is, at the minute, it is a third-party utility supplied by, I'm sure there's a couple of them, but the one that I know specifically would be GridPro. And they're downstairs in the Tech Expo Hall if you want to see them. But they will do an inbuilt service manager connector directly to SMA. And with that, more demos.
Fantastic. So now we're back in Windows Azure Pack, but this time we have logged on as a tenant or an end user. So this end user is in here handling different virtual machines, SQLs, servers maybe. So if I want to do a new request from inside of Windows Azure Pack, that's not the out-of-the-box functionality. Instead, I have installed this add-on from GridPro, a Swedish company.
Yep.
Nice.
Good night, nice Swedish company.
You know it's good stuff then. Yeah. So in here, we can do new, and we can do request. And we will get the entire service catalog from Service Manager, now shown
Windows
Azure Pack. So let's do a new request here. Let's request multiple servers with SMA. How many servers do you need today?
Five stars.
Yeah. We review that and we post it. So we create a service request in Service Manager requesting five servers. Now comes the really nice thing here. So in Service Manager, we have installed a connector, also from GridPro, that will import all our SMA runbooks into Service Manager, exactly the same way we do with Orchestrator.
Fantastic. Yeah?
So they will show up in here, SMA runbooks, exactly as they show up with Orchestrator runbooks. And the same way that I can use Orchestrator runbooks as activities, I can now use my SMA runbooks as activities. So this is a service request template. So each time we request servers, we need to fill in that form. And on the activity tab, I have specified a number of activities that will happen each time you order servers. And in this case, I have specified a runbook. And if we open that one up, you see, it looks a little bit different than the Orchestrator ones. But we have all the properties. It's just that it's blue there. The header is blue. So this is our SMA runbook that I'm now using as activity in a service request. So what will happen is that we do the request from Windows Azure Pack, and we pass it to Service Manager. Service Manager trigger SMA, and then SMA will send back all the data to Service Manager that will update the work item. A service request in this case. Mm-hmm. So it's really nice. We have the same kind of integration between SMA and Service Manager as we have with Orchestrator and Service Manager. And in this demo, we have even replaced the Service Manager portal with the Windows Azure Pack.
Which is really nice.
It's really, really nice. So if we go back, the end user or the tenant can go in and look at all the different work items, can see activities, if it's completed or not, and can also paste some comments in here to Service Desk, and it will show up in the work item there. Really nice.
It is.
Yes.
As he said, is that you all the existing service requests that you currently have can just be translated over to an SMA runbook. So you're not having to recreate all these forms from scratch. You're just replacing the activities from orchestrator activities to SMA activities. So sweating those existing assets that you've already created.
And if you're really, really automation ninja, you can really mix them any way you want. As you can see here, I can pick from all my orchestrator runbooks and all my SMA runbooks. So you can do it any way you want. If you like some scenarios running in orchestrator, some scenarios running in SMA, you can just mix them into the same, in this case, a service request template. Yeah. So you don't have to go either that way or that way. You can mix them any way you want.
Yep. Cool.
Yeah?
Good. Okay. So let us switch back. So as if you haven't already guessed by now, and you've heard it, Azure Automation is SMA, or it's the same principles as SMA. Obviously, the way the services are architected inside Azure is slightly different than what it's going to be on-premise. But you can be fundamentally aware that they do have a concept of runbook workers, they do have a SQL database, but just how they execute the content inside the cloud is slightly different. But the really important thing to understand, it is the same process automation engine built on PowerShell workflow. So the investments you make today in SMA on-premise will translate to Azure Automation when it becomes time for you guys to get there. So this is why we say, like, it's really important to really invest time into PowerShell. It's really important to invest time into PowerShell workflows, and it's really important to invest time into SMA now and translate your skills to that type of environment. They are going to be translatable to the cloud, and that's really, really important. So it was just announced general availability as well.
Yes, fantastic. Five stars. So.
Seven.
I have a small demo here.
Yeah?
Yep.
Okay. Let me switch back.
Yep. Haha. Now you think we are in the Windows Azure Pack portal, but we are not. Now we're in the Azure portal instead. And it's not SMA. Now it's Azure Automation. But as you can see, it really looks exactly the same. And it works more or less the same.
Yeah, more or less.
And I want to show you a couple of nice things here. The first one, we have all our runbooks here, as we have in SMA. So if we go down here and do new automation runbook, we can pick from gallery. That's very nice.
Gallery?
Yeah, from a gallery.
Ooh.
So now it will connect to the gallery. And we will see that we have, on the left side here, we have a number of categories for different kind of runbooks. And we can see that in different categories, we have different amount of runbooks. So let's say we want to go into the utility category. And we can browse this, like copy a file from an Azure VM, download something here. We can click on the link. We can read more about it on the TechNet gallery. Yeah, and it seems nice. A lot of people have already downloaded it. We can look at the comments. Yeah, and it seems like a nice runbook. So then we do next. We can review the code before we import it. Or well, maybe we have time to write it ourselves.
Yeah.
So, planning any special tonight?
No, nothing special.
No.
Right.
Oh, here it is. So we can review the code here. Yeah, it looks nice. We can decide a name if we want another name in our environment, if we have different subscriptions, maybe different automation accounts. But it looks good. Let's import that. Yep. So now we're importing a runbook from Microsoft Gallery. Yeah?
Yeah, which is really cool.
it's really nice. So now we have it here, and now we can start working with it. So we can even use all the community runbooks and all other runbooks that Microsoft have published already. And another really nice thing with Azure Automation is that if you start using Azure, for example, Azure Virtual Machines, you know that you're paying per minute, yeah? Meaning that you don't want to pay when you're not using the machines. That's a little bit the idea behind cloud computing. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what you can do then is to build a small script, small runbook, like this one I have built here, that looks into a PaaS database. So it looks into a database that I also have in Azure. And I will show you the database. Now, so here's the database. The only thing that the database is keeping is the server names and the size, night size, and day size, meaning that the size I want the machines to have during office hours mm-hmm. and the size I want the machines to have during non-office hours.
Okay.
Yeah. So I have stored it in a database in Azure. And my small runbook is reading from that database. So it's reading from the database, and it reconfigures my VMs. And I have connected a schedule to this runbook. So it runs every morning, 7:30. And it scales up some machines, it starts some machines. And then I have another runbook running around 11, I think, something like that. And it will shut down some machines, it will scale down some machines.
Which is really cool, managing your costs.
Exactly. So it's quite nice to have automation in there when we're using the rest of Azure.
Cool.
Yes, very nice.
Excellent. So as you see there's lots you can do. The skills that you bring from on-premise SMA and that you will learn, translatable to the cloud, and then you can also manage a lot of environments and that you can't achieve with great ease on-premise. You can do it when inside the cloud. And it's only going to get better. Like the feature set when inside Azure Automation is going to get better with each iteration. And you can see how quickly Azure releases updates.
Yeah.
So
time to summarize the session.
Just first, and if you do want to know more, CDP B344, introduction to the new Azure Automation Service, will give you a bit more information on Azure Automation. Some more information for you guys. We are on boot duty downstairs, so please come talk to us if you want. We'll be here after the session. We're in no particular rush.
No, absolutely not.
Please feel free, or in a few seconds, we can take some questions.
Yep.
If you do want to do some certificates, classroom training. These are some of the codes. Check it out. There's a lot of good stuff available inside TechEd this week, so definitely have
Absolutely.
Some research.
Yeah. And please fill in the eval, and as always, be very honest when you're filling it in, but also be extremely generous. That's very important.
Five stars.
Extremely generous.
Yeah. So QR code. Some more related content that if you guys want to check out or go a bit more deeper this week or look at the Channel 9 recordings when they're posted, some of the sessions or the hands-on lab downstairs or wherever we are in some room close by, they do the automation and self-service. And just to cap it all off for today, just a quick summary. So hopefully today you now know what SMA is, the fact that you can use SMA together and with Orchestrator and sweat that asset today and make a stage migration. Upgrade your skills slowly but surely and get over to SMA eventually, or what will be the new Orchestrator, as it will be called. Use SMA together with Service Manager by using third-party integrations. And keep an eye on the blogs on MSDN and the Building Cloud blogs, because there's a lot of good utilities and features up there to be able to accelerate your learning of SMA. Really important, there you do not need a private cloud for SMA. So make sure that when you're going back and you're bringing SMA in, that you don't have to spin up Hyper-V and Virtual Machine Manager, all those components. You can run SMA independently today and work with your environment that way. And finally, it solves many challenges. You've seen there with the PowerShell workflows and checkpoints and the other elements that we've talked about. Solving them problems for an orchestrator guy is like a little bit of heaven coming back into your life. It genuinely is. I have a lot of frustration personally with it, and I'm sure you did as well, Anders. So you can check a lot of stuff that Anders has written up on his blog, contosa.se. Feel free. There's a lot of good articles on how-tos and discussions on why things run in a particular way or concepts or idea. And you can also contact him that way, which is cool.
Absolutely.
And you can contact me on Twitter at McCabeJ. anytime you want, or just come downstairs to the booth and we can talk more. Yeah. As of that, if you have any questions, please, we'll stop the recording in a second and you can ask us as much questions as you want. But thank you very much.
Thank you.